September 28, 2020. It's a lot from Pedro Show.
not.
Oh, no, it's not.
Not things I have. I got a mother, sister, and a brother who have gone to that sweet land. I'm determined.
For Pedro Show. Happy Monday. Last Monday, September. This month's almost gone, people. Still in Quentin Quarantino mode with Brother Matt's Love Grotto on the Pleasure Point, a couple miles south here. We started the show off with John Coltrane Quartet doing Serenity from his Meditations. You know, there's two versions, right? And this one's got six movements. Then Upper Hamilton Grave Diggers with I Am a Pilgrim. And you can hear my guest laughing there. Mr. Jack Wright, welcome aboard.
Hello there, Mike.
Yeah. it's a real privilege and honor to have you on the show, truly. I've got to give big respect to Evan Lipson for making the connect. I just got to talk to Zach a couple episodes ago, and he's one of your collaborators. A lot of these cats are. Jack, what's your earliest musical recollection?
I heard you ask that of
every guest I've had for the last 19 years, Jack. I asked that same question.
Well, I tried to think about it. So it was sometime in the late 40s, and I was thinking what I heard was "Open the Door, Richard." And I looked it up, and it was a song by Louis Jordan, or Jordan.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty raunchy song, so I doubt if I heard that on AM radio, but I probably had heard some version of it. And I had a little friend, this is like 1948 or so, I had a little friend, Richard, so I always thought of him. So that was probably the first thing. But mostly, my mother was a classical pianist, and she taught piano, and we had a lot of classical music. We had a Victrola. We did before we had an electric. We listened to, it did have 33 speed, and when LPs came out, I remember there were three LPs that she got, and one was Beethoven's Fifth, and another one was Pablo Casals conducting some Bach arrangements, and the Stravinsky Firebird. So I liked all of them, but the Firebird certainly came up in my mind later on, having heard that at an early date. It was something that later on her taste in music narrowed a little bit and she didn't like anything as wild as that, but that's probably the first stuff that I listened to.
And where was this?
This was in a section of Philadelphia. Okay. That's where my family, was all from Philadelphia area.
Now, your mom being a piano teacher, did she want you to take lessons from her?
No. When I was, the general thing we had moved out to Chicago, Chicago suburbs. And when kids got to be 10 years old, if they wanted to play an instrument, they were asked, you know, now's the time to do it. I guess going into, fourth grade maybe. And so I knew I didn't want to play piano because then I'd be too much under her thumb. So we were listening to the radio in the kitchen one day, and I heard an instrument. And I said, "What's that instrument?" She said, "I think that's a saxophone." So I said, "Well, that's what I want to play."
Oh, wow.
So I think it's very interesting what instruments at a young age, you know, like 10 years old. I know you started much later than that, right? You started when you were a teenager.
Yeah. Well, I did try to do the clarinet in school in seventh grade, but after 10 weeks, the music teacher, Mr. Luna, said, "Mr. Watt, you try hard, but you maybe should stop wasting your time.
My time.
My time." Yours. And then he looked at the classroom and he said, "Our time." So I was pretty beaten down. So I got kind of into music when I was 12 years old because of a bass guitar, because it was a way of hanging out with my friend. In fact, his mother said, "You're going to play bass so you can play with him. You guys can have a band in the house after school." Yeah, because I moved from the Navy house into these projects, and it was early 70s. In fact, it was 1970, so there wasn't a lot of guns, but, there, you know, a little bit of trouble and stuff. So she wanted us in the house after school, so that's how I got on bass. And I'm very grateful to
her. I think I heard about that on a video that I saw about you. Knew a little bit about you.
Okay. Well, I want to know a little bit about you. What was the first record you bought with your own money?
That was probably a Johnny Hodges record. It was a 10-inch where he was featured with Duke Ellington. And I was really very, very taken with it. I mean, I had the feeling, I don't know, 11, 12 years old, I had the feeling like I had, when I listened to Daydream, I think was the piece, I felt like I knew what it was to faint, and I felt like I had fainted, and I would fall back onto the bed. It was really, I was making it up, but it was still this feeling of just being knocked out by this. And it was because he did something really unique, I'm sure you know. He was a saxophonist who could slide from top to bottom or bottom to top. He slid all over the place. And this is not easy. This is easy to do on the clarinet, because on the clarinet you can uncover your fingers and there are holes there.
That's right.
You can do that gradually. But the saxophone, all the holes are covered with pads. So I could never do it. And I've never never heard anybody else do it effectively. But he really still impressed me with what he was able to do.
I think it's called a glissandro, or gliss?
Well, it's, yeah, which is usually something you do on a stringed instrument.
Right.
You just slide your finger. But it's much more difficult to get that. It's a combination of lip and opening your fingers very gradually.
Right. So technique. What was the first gig you saw in person, people playing?
Let's see, well, it might have been, I forget the guy's name, trumpet player. My mom took me and, my friend, Bobby Ellis down to Chicago to the Blue Note in Chicago on a Sunday matinee, and there was this very popular trumpet player at the time. I mean, they weren't, you know, they didn't serve us drinks, but this was supposed to be for, you know, young people could come and hear jazz. So we saw this guy. He was just, you know, barely awake at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'd never seen a jazz musician before, but he played. I was pretty impressed. And also Errol Garner was there. For some reason, I can remember his name. But that was the first gig, probably. But then we saw, Dave Brubeck. His quartet was very popular, I think, 1954. This was in a big outdoor park, Ravinia Park, north of Chicago. So I didn't really go. I've never really gone to a lot of music. Never really gone to shows that much.
Well, you know your book's got an intro from Davey Williams, and Davey Birmingham guy, and another guy from Birmingham was Sun Ra, and I know he spent a lot of time in Chicago.
Right. And
his big influence was Fletcher Henderson, and he had to play kind of these, like, you know, they were like kind of late night places and maybe burlesque kind of pads. So I doubt if you would have been able to see that.
No. Well, the Chicago jazz scene was really pretty scary for a kid like me, you know, from the suburbs, you know, Boy Scout, and I was a very straight kid, and which is why I didn't continue in jazz, because I knew I just didn't fit with the jazz musicians, and I also never really got the hang of improvising jazz improvisation. So I really quit taking lessons or any kind of serious work on the saxophone by 1958 or so.
Okay, I want to play Denver 2002, No Net. Ha 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 ha.
Bye. We'll be right back.
Pedro Show, yeah, No Net. Something live with Jack right there, Denver, 2002. Then we had Bogdan Rosinski with YY, Aunt Sally with SA. Spelled funny with an E. Or like in SoCal here, SA, yeah, kind of a steer. Candy Colored Dub, Model Home, collaborate with His Name Alive. Brand new from Shige. He sent me his Batu Fatina. He had a two-month, what do you call that when you stay somewhere? Residency in Uganda. He came up with this Swordman Katala, produced by DJ Scotch Rolex, but he's also known as DJ Scotch. Me doing a Rocky Erickson song for the DC Black Club, Black Cat Club, Bermuda. Sonic Ground Review band with Fred Sonic Smith and Scotty on the drums, of course. City Slang. Great. I think it's the only record they made, 7-inch. And then Jack Wright with Ben Wright, who I guess is your son, right? This was in New Mexico. As if anything could be the same. That's kind of like the idea of No Net, you know. I like this idea. You know, I've been reading your book. Now, it's going to take me a little time. It's pretty dense. But it's interesting when you speak about jazz in the book, you say it's kind of a precursor of the free musics. Listeners out there, the book's called The Free Musics by Jack Wright, and I recommend to everybody. It's beautiful. It's a righteous fucking thing. And you talk a little about jazz there, like... Well, you explain yourself, Jack.
Well, sure. Free improvisation, the form especially that is this word represents to people who have been doing it for some time, originated in in the UK in the 60s, didn't originate in the US. Here it was much more free jazz, and that had a big influence on free improvisation. The way I saw it was that in the 70s, a lot of people, including Davy Williams, were influenced by free jazz, and in a way, taking off from that. In other words, inspired by it after the time when free jazz was really no longer moving ahead or changing that much. So free jazz really continued as a creative form that is changing from 1 year to the next, new records coming out, new ideas. That kind of ended around 1967 with the death of John Coltrane.
Yeah.
And it continued in much the same way, but the audience for it, a lot of things collapsed in the late 60s. A lot of things culturally, and certainly free jazz was associated with the urban riots. People thought that it was free jazz was incendiary music, and so anyway, a lot of things happened to jazz altogether at that time. People believed that free jazz was the end of jazz altogether, and can't go into all that happened, but it began to be picked up by people in the 70s around the country, even in Canada, independently. It evolved in sort of in the spirit of the 60s, and then people began to get together, especially in New York City and in the Bay Area, California, in the mid to late 70s, and people moved to these areas or got in touch with the people there, and of course at that time, just through finding a record and then writing to people, I found out about somebody in Minneapolis, Milo Fine, in 1981 or so. My local library had this record, the Milo Fine Free Jazz Ensemble. I listened to it. It had his address, I think, and I wrote to him, and, you know, so this is the way people began to get connected. But it was mostly in the original or earliest period, it was New York City and the Bay Area. And mostly it was very free jazz oriented. It was a lot of saxophonists and pretty cranked up music, fast, you know, hard driving. I was certainly into that. And not a lot of quiet or spatial playing through most of the 80s. But it was still open to sound and open to very strange things. Like there was this basement venue in Manhattan, which was originally an anarchist space. It was the Alchemical Theater, but a lot of the letters dropped off, and all that was left was AMICA. So it was called Amica. And every Sunday there'd be a show there, and this would be completely unpublicized, but people would come, and anybody who wanted to could play. So people would come with all kinds of, you know, crazy things. People might just come with these, toy pianos and little percussion, and because free improv was just open to just anything outside of normal music, outside of commercial music. And it didn't involve people who wanted to make a name for themselves. It was just, you know, a completely underground thing. And it's pretty much the same, but it's changed and has evolved in that there are a lot of people who still play really hard, you know, hard-driving music, and other people that play much quieter and, you know, people have developed different techniques and so on.
What you're saying is that there's not just one way to be free.
Right. But if you, the thing is that free improv, if you say, okay, we're going to play free, and then somebody starts playing playing a beat or chord changes, they'll lose track because you can't keep that up. You can go ahead and do that, but pretty soon you get drawn into the web of free playing. So it's not easily combined with other kinds of music.
Yeah, I was thinking of another direction that the jazz scene seemed to go was a fusion, maybe in the 70s.
Yeah, well, that was always followed some kind of a rhythmic, you know, a steady rhythmic pattern. I think that's probably the most indicative of anything. If you don't have a pulse, some kind of strict, some kind of idea that a regularity of a beat, then you don't have anything to hang chord changes on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. But I gotta tell you, that fusion scene bored me to tears. Look, Jack, we're at the end of the first hour, September 28, 2020 edition. Wat Pedro Show, special guest Jack Wright, hold tight for hour two. September 28, 2020, it's the second hour of the Wat for Pedro Show.
Thank you.
For Pedro Show, start off the second hour with Kill Time. That's Jack Wright. Who's playing with you in this combo?
Okay, well, it's just a duo with a drummer, Murray Reams.
Murray Reams.
Who has, he was from North Carolina, from Greensboro. I used to go down there and play and met him at one point. And he just dropped out of sight. At one point, he became a poet he said that a lot of people were angry at him for quitting the drums, and I said, no, you just go ahead and do whatever. I've tried to find out what happened to him. But he's really a great drummer. That's me playing tenor, which I don't do that. I don't do that anymore. Not performing. But it's that's the kind of fierce, high energy playing that I did through consistently until just the end of the 90s, when I started experimenting with really quiet stuff and playing slow. I mean, just doing everything the opposite from what I had done. I felt confined by the free jazz direction, even though I enjoyed it, and I had my own way about it.
Okay. We had Diamond Dinky Dunko, the Dancing Clown from Sam Bennett. After that, Death Rattle, track 3 from Abrams and Kane. That's got Pat Kane from Mobile Home on tenor when he was in Buffalo. He moved on to, like, manipulating samples and stuff. You know, music is a journey. So if you don't want to be, like, in rerun mode, maybe you got to move to different kind of things, you know? One thing was an opposite, though, Jack. You stayed free. Even though you weren't playing hard charger with the and went to softer, you still kept the free thing going. And then finally, Roughhousing, Philly 2019 from last year. And I played some Roughhousing when I had Zach on the show because I think he's part of this with Ben Bennett.
Right.
Right.
Well, no, Roughhousing is me and Zach and Evan Lipson.
Oh, Evan, okay, yeah, on the bass. Okay, okay. Ben Bennett's a drummer, man.
Right. But Evan and Ben and I were in a group and did a bunch of tours earlier as a Rest, W-R-E-S-T.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. My mistake. I'm sorry, Jay. But Roughhousing, yeah, you and Zach. But this is, well, this is more a collaboration, right? You're talking about where you play slower and stuff, that's Man Alone?
Well, that was, I was doing that around, like 20 years ago. And for a period of time, I was just, working in that direction. Now, what came out of that for me was moving more into sound because, before that, the 80s and 90s, I was playing pretty much all real notes. Maybe people don't know what real notes are, but they're, you know, it's a straight sound. Where it really sounds like the saxophone. And starting 20 years ago, I was changing my embouchure and changing the way I worked with my fingers, doing multiphonics more, and doing all kinds of sound that people would say commonly, and they still say, I've never heard a saxophone sound like that. So, saxophonists occasionally make some kind of off sound, but that's what I do a good bit of the time. So it's that's one thing that's different from the past. And the other is that Zach was living in the house down in Philly where I would go down about once a week. He moved there in 2014, and I would go down there and play with him almost every week or every 2 weeks. And I don't know if he influenced me or I influenced him, but we began to play differently in a way that was more interruptive. In other words, so he'll play something with something jammed into his strings, and then he'll stop and he'll find something else. And when it stopped like that, I realized that I didn't want to play over that. I would also stop and start. I mean, that got me into starting and stopping as well, so that there was a kind of rhythm that was happening in just punching, sort of like punching at different times, at unexpected times, where you're creating a rhythm out of the gaps between events, which is a lot different from playing through. Like if you listen to practically any music, The idea is you just fill in the space entirely from the beginning to end. There's going to be continuous sound as if that's what the audience wants. And you can do things differently where you, you know, like in roughhousing, we'll be going along, all of a sudden the three of us will stop and then start off another direction, completely different direction.
Interesting. You know, the Slits had a lyric, "Silence is a rhythm too." I want to play this duo you got with Patrick Crossland.
Yeah. Ha ha ha.
For Pedro Show, Jack Wright with Patrick Crossland Duo. Well, I guess it's called the Jack Wright Patrick Crossland Duo.
That was that's the last gig I've played.
Most
because
recent?
that was in Newark, Delaware. Patrick is
Newark,
down
Delaware.
In Maryland.
You know, I've been to Newark, Delaware once.
Uh huh.
Because everybody knows about the Newark in New Jersey across, you know, the Hudson. But I have been to Newark, Delaware.
Well, there's a bike shop there with a large space for performance, and they have a performance once a month, the last Friday of every month, and it's almost always electronics players from that area. Newark, Delaware is where the University of Delaware is, so that's where a lot of people have, you know, either gone to school there and stayed around afterwards. So, and that's a very interesting gig. I've played there many, many times with Zach and other people. So, anyway, it's interesting to play in a bike shop.
We had Have a Nice Life after that with Music Will Untie the Sky. And then a project you got called Never. And I played some of this with Zach. September 2019. Tell us about Never, Jack.
Let's see. Well, that's Ben Bennett, percussion, Zach Darup
right.
On guitar. And that recording is from, that's the first tour that we've done. We've played a lot together. I mean, I've played with Ben since 2008 or so. Now, his dad is a very interesting writer. If I say he's a poet, he might say, well, I'm not really what you think a poet is. That's the way he talked.
Mr. Burroughs.
But he's about my age. He's late 70s. And, I met him in the mid 80s. He was, his dad. I met him in Cincinnati. He was doing a poetry reading, and I was playing solo, and somebody said, well, why don't you do something together? So I said, oh, well, okay. So he did this thing where he went, the shirt, the sheet, the shirt, the sheet. And I would just, you know, play and punch along with that. That was the whole performance. Anyway, we did a bunch of things together, and then I heard his son play, I think, 2005 or 2006, he's playing drum kit. And after that, we got together, sometimes with his dad. Anytime I came through, we would play. And then he moved to Philly. He probably told you about that.
Yeah, well,
so
he said you had an incredible impact on him. So did Zach.
Yeah. Well, they've influenced me a lot. I've toured with Ben and with Zach with Zach more than I've played with Zach more than any other musician probably at this point.
Whoa.
Mostly sessions. I mean, to me, sessions are just as important as gigs.
Yeah, they're, absolutely.
I remember Zach talking about how, Roughhousing only plays together on tour, but that's because Evan lives down in Chattanooga, and so we just don't get together very often.
Right.
But Zach is right there in Philly, and I'm not far away. I go down there, and so we play. Recently, we've been playing with Ben. So either at Ben's house or at where Zach lives in his space, we get together. And so we just had that one tour last fall, and I'm sure we'd like to do more. But playing in the future, I don't know what you think about it, but it's especially for a saxophonist, you know, like musicians can who aren't playing wind instruments, they can put a mask on. But otherwise, and also, you know, people indoors, it's very limited. I'm wondering what you're thinking of, because you're still touring, aren't you?
Not right now.
Not at the moment.
Yeah, not now. But I'll tell you, at the moment, we're at the end of the second hour, September 28, 2020 edition. Rob Peters, a special guest, Jack Wright. Hold tight for hour three. September 28, 2020. It's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Watt from Pedro Show. We started the third hour off with Jack Wright and Bob Marsh, an excerpt from Birds in the Hand. What's this, Proj?
That's with Bob Marsh, and he is the, I met him in 86, and he's the only one from that era that I'm still playing with. I'm not playing with too many older people at all. He's down in Pueblo, Colorado right now. Had to leave the Bay Area for reasons of, you know, the great rental property squeeze.
Yeah, it's terrible.
And he found a nice place in Pueblo, he and his wife. So I'm out there often because my sons, I have two sons live in New Mexico. So I go out there and I play with my one son, plays bass, and then I come through Pueblo and play with Bob. But we've toured quite a bit, East Coast, Midwest.
I think the Connect Road is the I-25. Pedro Party Band after that crane flowed me this Hopeful Mirage. Then Bronze Age UFO out of Baltimore, not too far from Newark, Delaware. Helen Butte said this, Part B. And finally, Colorado, Boulder, 1999, Jack Wright. This is a little different for you, right, with the piano?
Yeah. Well, I was in Boulder for 15 years. It was my my escape from the East Coast. There were a lot of people who were getting away from improvised music. And I was mostly involved with people in New York, and I couldn't get any gigs in New York. And Philly wasn't possible either. So I was doing these long distance tours. I started in 85, I think. I started touring and realizing that it was much more interesting to play in different places. And I started finding places. The first tour was probably with Chris Cochran, the guitarist in New York, and Paul Hoskin, who died a few years ago, reed player, Barry, sax player. So I started going and trying to find places to play. I was able to play in Chicago, and we played in Toledo at some poetry gathering and stuff like that. And on one of these tours, I did a tour with a dancer, and we did a tour through the Midwest, down as far as Tulsa, Lincoln, Nebraska. I mean, I had just never been out in that part of the country at all. I had been in the Midwest as a kid, but because he was a dancer, he was able to get into spaces, because dancers have to perform. Musicians can, you know, do things in small spaces, but dancers really need to get audience and space and, you know, a place that has the money. So on one of these tours, I met Bob Marsh in Detroit, and I've been playing with him ever since.
Whoa. I want to play something here. This is You Again Alone, Naples, 1986. Thank you.
Thank you.
For Pedro Show, Naples 1986, Jack Ray. And then we had Galextasy. You know, you asked me about touring. What is the future of touring? Yeah, I have no idea. It's going to happen somehow, but you're right, there's probably going to have to be changes. I'll tell you one thing, this last tour I did before this all came down, I wasn't shaking people's hands and I didn't get sick. And I didn't know this was coming. But I was tired, you know, 40 years of getting sick. So I just gave people elbow and shit. A lot of dudes got pissed off, but I was just tired. And then, you know, the tour's over in November. I play a gig here. Of course, somebody shakes my hand. I get sick. And then the shit comes out. And I'm thinking, you know what? I might have been on to something without even knowing it. So, well, you asked me, and that's my answer.
Mike, you're the canary in the mine. You're the one who's going to let us know when the next virus comes around. You just announce it on your show, and everybody will pick it up. Oh, Mike is sick. Must be something else coming on.
Hunker down.
Yeah.
So, but what about your future plans? I'm interested.
Well, there's one nice thing about COVID. Is that for me, see, I organize all the tours that I go on. I have the contacts, and I kind of enjoy doing it, but it soaks up a lot of time. And so not knowing when anything can possibly happen means that there is nothing to be planned. Like a tour in Europe means, you know, maybe a year in advance, you got to get started on it. The tour in this country, you can do like four months, depending on the kind of venues. But most places we play are, you know, house shows, and these are, you know, 2 months for most of them. So there's nothing to be planned when you can't be sure of what's going to happen. I had to cancel two tours, one with Ben Bennett, which was in Italy and the Balkans. It took a tremendous amount of work getting that thing together. And then that was just like, well, that was supposed to be in March. And we were late March. And, you know, it was obvious very soon in February that wasn't going to be possible. So that was canceled. And then I had to cancel another one, which was with Roughhousing, a smaller tour. So so being in this kind of limbo is very interesting. Having lived a life since the early 80s when I started touring, well, mid 80s I really started touring, all this time having tours and having a schedule, you know, living by a calendar, living, you know, with the knowledge that something had to be planned. And like when I was living in Boulder, I did three tours a year. I did one tour to the West Coast and two tours to the East Coast. So having been touring all this time, suddenly released from it, I mean, it's a strange kind of, I don't know, death and rebirth. There's no idea. You know, people are still uncertain when this thing is going to be over.
Of course. Of course. You know, where can people find you on the internet there, Jack?
Springgardenmusic.com.
Okay, that's SpringGarden,
music,
MUSIC.com. Yeah.
Yeah, but if you just go Jack Wright saxophone, it'll probably, I'll probably come up there.
And that's with the W, people.
Yeah, the only rights in the world.
Right.
They all have W.
That's right, the airplane guys, Dayton. what about young people? Like, you know, like Zach or Ben Bennett, but even younger people. What would be your advice to them getting into this free music?
First of all, don't go to school. Don't go to music school. That makes it very difficult to break out of what you're being taught. I mean, once you're in school, you sort of have to get with the program. And when you come out of it, you've got certain ideas, certain skills that you are attached to. And it's much better to start from scratch and just start playing with people. You know, just ask somebody, anybody, do you want to play free? And you get together. It's kind of leisure time thing where you're not thinking, oh, let's get a band together, just getting together and see what happens. I mean, that's what improv is. That's, you know, let's see what happens.
Right.
Got it.
I think that's great advice, and it's a huge honor for me to have you on my show. Thank you so much, Jack, truly.
Well, glad you're doing this. I'm sitting here looking at this little circle picture of you. You've got some gray hair there.
Oh, yeah. I'm 60. I'll be 63 in December.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So.
You're one of us. I'll welcome you into the old folks.
Right. From the third act to the fourth act, right? People who's been there, you're beautiful, Jack. You keep on keeping on. You're a big inspiration to me, truly. People, it's the September 28, 2020 edition of the Watt for Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.